Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, we're joined by Nick Reyes from The Frequent Miler. And Nick, I know that I've known you for many, many years. I'm just so happy to have you on a podcast because I think this is the first time we're actually getting you on air.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. I love to talk. I love to talk travel. So, and, of course, great to see you guys again. So thank you very much for inviting me to be here. I'm excited to talk some stories and talk to your audience a little bit.
Welcome. It's a great pleasure. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
And so, Nick, actually, as we start out, Tom and I were going back and forth trying to think of when we first met you. I don't know if we met you at the same time. He and I were going back and forth. Were you at the Crystal City FTU way back in, I don't know, would that have been 2015 or 2014?
Yeah, I think it was 2014. And yeah, I was. Yeah, that was actually my first introduction to FTU and really to the deeper miles and points scene. I thought I knew a lot about miles and points. And then I met a friend of a friend. Actually, it was really kind of one of those wild, weird coincidences. I decided to run the Chicago Marathon with an old friend of mine who we were old running buddies back in the day. We ran cross country together in college. And then I didn't run at all for many years. And he ran a Chicago Marathon. I think my wife sensed that I was jealous that he had accomplished something that I kind of always wanted to do too, but never put together to do. So she really pushed and pushed until I did it. And at the end of the marathon, we kind of had a big party. And one of his friends had a father who was in town. And his father was at the after party, after the marathon. And his father had been at the Chicago seminars that weekend. And I had no idea what the Chicago Seminars was. This was the beginning, like when I was first getting started with Miles and Points. And he showed me his iPad and started showing me notes and things that he was learning about at the seminars. And it just blew my mind because there were lots of things I didn't know about. And so then, his son, who's become a very good friend of mine, Lance, said, hey, there's another conference coming up called FTU, and I think you should check it out. I think you'd be pretty interested. And sure enough, that was that Crystal City one. So that was what really opened the door. That was the first time I saw Greg speak from the Frequent Miler, my boss, of course, nowadays. And actually, his presentation, when I went to it thinking that I knew everything I needed to know about the topic he was speaking about. But I said, I'll just sit in and listen anyway. And it just totally, again, blew my mind and showed me that there was far more that I didn't know than there was that I did know. And so that was actually kind of a big turning point for me that led to where I am today. So funny enough, yes, I was definitely at that Crystal City one.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember where I might have seen you first. And that seemed to strike me as where it could have been. And, that one's also monumental because, that's actually where I met Trevor for the first time, believe it or not, as well.
Wow, I didn't know
that's where we started our friendship.
Yeah, where everything started, apparently.
Yeah, so we had the origin story for a lot of this is starting to come out. It's interesting how everything is. And I think we've found that as we've been talking to various guests, as big as the miles and points world is, we're all linked at a very kind of basic level. And you find out the miles and points world is not so big, right? Because everybody kind of knows everybody or they're linked to everybody in some way.
Very true.
And I also find it interesting just kind of understanding people's origin stories. We had Deb Schroeder on, last episode, and she was right about that time of Pudding Guy, if you remember the stories of him. With the, buy the pudding, get the miles, and I guess donate the pudding. I think it's just interesting because we all take this from different angles. And I think that informs sort of how things are now. I mean, we kind of maybe didn't grow up in it, but when I had gotten into this and started doing things like generating points through manufactured spending and that sort of thing, the multipliers weren't really there. You had the inks. But other than that, it was all kind of smaller stuff. And now it's people talk about multipliers and it's like, if there's not a sufficient multiplier, sometimes double digits, the math doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to the same point, flights were a whole lot cheaper. I mean, I think my first award redemption for first was 67,500 miles going from the US to Japan via Germany. And now that's, I don't even want to think about how much that is.
It would be a lot more.
Other generation also, we kind of talked a little bit about like mileage runs and mattress runs, which they seemed to make a lot more sense back when, again, you didn't have multipliers on credit card spend and there were sufficient bonuses and other promotions and things where it might make sense to do a mattress run or miles run, where nowadays it's hardly ever the case.
That's true. That's true. But, you know, I think it's very easy to slip into the golden age thinking and say, oh, you know, what was, what was. But, you know, there are still sweet spots out there. You know, it's funny you mentioned that 67 and change, because earlier today, Greg and I were recording our weekly Frequent Miler on the Air podcast. So when that podcast comes out, one of the things we're talking about is the Life Miles Plus subscriptions this week. So we were discussing how Avianca Life Miles is really kind of a gameable program, right? Because if you have a mixed cabin award, you can drop the price. And so first class, he looked up an example just today of a first class flight from Frankfurt to Newark that would have been 87,000 miles one way, of course, just for that nonstop. But by adding a business class segment from Lisbon or from Malta to Frankfurt and then connecting on to Newark, it dropped it to 75,000 miles because of the business class segment and the mixed cabin pricing. And then if you were to subscribe to Life Miles Plus, you'd get a 10% rebate and you'd be at 67.5 one way for first class. Now, it's not Japan to the US, but 67.5 one way for Europe to the US in first class with no surcharges. I mean, there are weird, wacky things out there. It's not quite the same. I was going to say as easy. I don't know if it was easy back then either, because like you said, we didn't have the multipliers, right? But it's still interesting. There's still plenty of interesting out there.
There really is. And I love that you brought that up, because I think in addition to that subscription that you mentioned with Life Miles, they also recently made it easier to book, I think, right? They made it a little bit more customer friendly.
A little bit more. I mean, you know, the website's still kind of difficult, but I think they're working at making it better. I think they seem to be committed to that. Gary, a view from The Wing, recently reported that they now have these sort of expert level agents that are on, I don't know, there's at least one on every shift or a couple on during the day and some overnight, which wasn't always the case, apparently. So, you know, I think that they're making moves to be more customer friendly. And yeah, the Lufthansa flights are back. Interestingly, and again, this is kind of hot off the presses, so to speak. I haven't had time to really look into it yet, but Greg was just looking at this morning before we recorded, and he found that, for instance, that Frankfurt to Newark flight, when he searched that initially, it didn't show up at all. And eventually he searched from Munich and a connecting option of some sort, or maybe it was a different city, a connecting option came up that went through Frankfurt and had that Frankfurt flight that didn't show up on its own. So then he searched again for the Frankfurt to Newark, and all of a sudden it showed up. And he, of course, used the various different smart search and carrier specific, but searching multiple times yielded different results. So it was almost like a slot machine. And we found that to be the case with the American Airlines website before, like searching a few times within the space of 10 minutes, the price is not always the same, you know, on their own medal, their own award. So we've often referred to that as kind of like a slot machine. You know, you like just keep searching and see, did I hit the jackpot yet? No. Should I pull again? So that might be what you need to do with Life Miles do these days.
Well, there's one way to prevent that great equalizer of the different search tools, I guess. I don't know that if that really benefits anybody other than the folks that are really going to spend more time hammering at it.
I have to assume it's a glitch and not a feature, but but I don't know. It's really hard to say. Maybe it's because I was just in Las Vegas that's in my mind. But it definitely seems like there's some element of keep trying if you don't find what you want the first time.
If there's one thing, it's perseverance. Definitely is name of the game. So, Nick, I don't know that we've even talked offline about what your first redemption was. Would you be willing to share that?
I'm going to give you two answers to that, because really it's a two-pronged answer. My very, very first redemption was before I knew anything about miles and points or credit cards. My wife and I had taken a couple of cheap flights. Like we were, before I discovered miles and points, my wife and I already had the travel itch. And so we would work really hard, sometimes 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And then we would take a month or two off and go travel somewhere as cheaply as we could, buying the cheapest tickets we could, staying in the cheapest hostels we could find. So we had taken a couple of trips in a row. And I guess it was Continental at the time. And maybe at some point that, you know, it became United all together as one. And so I had a feeling that I had made an account and had some miles in there, and I had no idea what to do with them. And somehow, I guess I must have Googled it, and I found that inter-island flights in Hawaii were 10,000 miles each way, I think at the time. And I had 10,000 miles. I was like, oh, great, I'm going to get a free flight to Hawaii. So I called, or not to Hawaii, rather, within Hawaii. And so I called to make the redemption, and the agent said, oh, yes, you can do that, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I pulled it all up. And then she said, oh, well, and of course, because it's within 21 days, it'll just be a $75 fee, because they had a close-in booking fee back then. And I felt like stupid. I felt I was on the phone, and I felt myself get embarrassed. And I felt like, oh, I was supposed to know that. And I just paid it without really thinking about the fact that those flights were like $77 one way, I think. So I had redeemed 10,000 miles to save all of like $2. So it was a pretty poor first redemption. So it probably fed into that narrative of all miles are useless, although I didn't really even have that at that time because I didn't know very much about it. But then what happened later was that I was buying and selling stuff and earning free miles on my Capital One card. And so actually it's sort of a three-prong answer because eventually we took a cruise, a family cruise, and we paid for it with the Capital One miles we had gotten from reselling products. And we were like, oh, this is pretty cool. And we kept traveling for a while. Again, just cheap travel. And then we decided, okay, we'd been together a long time. We traveled quite a bit. We're going to settle down. We're going to get married. Let's have one last hurrah and fly all around the world, you know, one last time before we settle down and have kids and join the real world. And so I started doing research about how to do that, how to buy a round the world ticket. And I stumbled on stuff like The Points Guy and Million Mile Secrets. And then I stumbled on more stuff and I started reading more blogs and things. So I spent about a year reading everything I could. And then about a year collecting all of the miles and points that I could. And when I went to that FTU in Crystal City, if I remember correctly anyway, I think Ben Schlappig from One Mile at a Time spoke. And during his presentation, he asked how many people in this room primarily use their miles and points to fly in business and first class. And almost every hand in the room went up. And I looked around and it hadn't even dawned on me to use my points for business or first class because I had never flown like that. I didn't even know what that meant, really. All I knew is, well, the front end of the plane gets there the same time as the back end of the plane. Why would I use more miles to get there at the same time? I just want to use as few miles as possible and see as many places as I can was what I thought. But then I looked around and I said, well, clearly I'm missing something. And so I was in the middle of spending that year collecting points at that point. And so when we took our honeymoon after we got married, the next year, we had our first award redemption that I would say was like a for real award redemption, which was first class on Etihad from Cairo to Tokyo. And it was not apartments. It was just Etihad's regular first class. But my goodness, what a game changer in our lives that was, because we had never seen a flatbed seat. We had never been in an airport lounge. And then all of a sudden, someone was serving us the champagne. And after we had a glass of, you know, whatever the regular champagne, the initial champagne they gave you was, they said, well, you should really try the rosé also. And we were like, no, we insist. You really need to try the rosé. Oh, I guess so. I guess we do. Let's give that a shot. And so that certainly changed things a lot because we were like, wow, now I understand why people are redeeming their miles. Because, of course, at the time, that was 45,000 American Airlines miles one way to fly from Cairo to Tokyo in first class. And today I think it's only 50,000. So it hasn't even gone up all that much or devalued all that much. But that was the first award of an 18 country, 4 month honeymoon. So we flew around the world mostly in business and first. And so that was the first time we had redeemed miles with knowledge of any kind of knowledge of what we were doing. So it was a lot of fun.
So it was a long answer. Crazy. Forever.
Yes.
But a great answer.
Yeah,
that was a great answer.
Definitely a great answer. So you were ruined forever flying Etihad first to Tokyo. So you said you had 18 countries. Mm-hmm. Was it 18 countries?
18 countries, yeah.
So Cairo, Tokyo, any other highlights that you want to share?
Yeah. So that trip, we went to the Maldives. We spent time in Europe initially at the beginning of that. And we ended up also in Australia and quite a few different places, Singapore. And we were on the plane on our way to the last stop. And my wife said, well, you know, when we get home, everybody's going to ask, what was your favorite place? And, you know, what was it? And I couldn't answer the question. I was like, well, I don't know. I've liked almost everywhere we've gone. Nothing stood out over the others. And she couldn't answer that question either. And so we weren't sure what we were going to say, but we were on the plane on our way to the last destination, which was South Africa. And going on safari in Kruger National Park was just so incredibly jaw-dropping that it was obvious to us by the time we were done with that, that that was the answer to the question. And we didn't even do a luxury safari camp or anything like that. We rented cabins in the national park through the South African National Park System. You can actually stay right in the park and it's pretty reasonable. Back then it was like $100 a night. I think it's a little more now, but it's not anything outrageous to stay in a cabin inside the national park. And then you get into the gates from those rest camps open earlier than the gates to the park. So if you're staying within the park, you get out in there driving around earlier. And so we were literally out the gates as soon as they opened in the morning, whether it was 4 a.m. or 5 a.m., I can't recall, but whatever the time was they opened, we were out the gates and driving around all day long, just absolutely amazed that we were kind of like living in the Discovery Channel and thinking to ourselves that this is something that we never reasonably thought we would be able to do. Like, it wasn't something that was on our radar that this was going to be an affordable trip for us to do. Or if it was, it was going to be one of those once in a lifetime, maybe we'll do it someday after we've had kids and saved up all of our money but not something that we're going to go back and do 15 months later, which is exactly what we did. So it was certainly something that blew our minds and became something so memorable that, like I said, we went back again just over a year later.
That sounds so familiar because, you know, it's funny how all these, you know, once in a lifetime trips end up being, well, okay, I guess we're going to do them multiple times in a lifetime. You know, after you tried once and you're like, oh my, this is so wonderful. I want to come back. That seems to be a theme that we've heard a couple times already.
And I think for me and for my family, I think we go into trips now and we enjoy them more because we don't try to cram everything in because it's a once-in-a-lifetime trip.
What a good advice. Yeah.
Rather, we just make the assumption that, hey, if we really like this, we can come back and see more.
I feel like that is such a freeing concept, right? I mean, it makes travel so much easier and so much more enjoyable. Because I totally felt that pressure the first few times. You know, when we traveled on a shoestring budget back in the day, it was always like, well, we're probably never going to be here again. So we've got to see and do everything we can. And not having that pressure because of miles and points is such an incredibly liberating feeling. So yeah, I'm with you there. I find that that is just one of the true highlights of using Monopoly money essentially to travel is that, you know, you can always print some more and go back again if you want. Because there are so many ways to generate the miles and points. We're so fortunate to be able to do that with all the various techniques and methods and bonuses and whatnot, that it can happen again. And I think even we were amazed that we were able to make it happen again in, you know, such a short time period, you know, just a little over a year later, just by being a little strategic about how we collected our miles and points. And, you know, and of course, there was a lot of strategy involved in the whole honeymoon and learning about different tricks. There was something cool I learned about from Travel is Free. It was a United hack that was based on their old award chart. So it's not applicable anymore. But the fun thing was that reading about how to do things outside of the box also opened my mind to destinations that I wouldn't have thought about before. Like on that trip, we ended up going to Saipan, which I had never heard of. I'm embarrassed to admit because there's quite a bit of World War II history there, but I didn't even know it existed until I saw it on an award chart. And I was like, Saipan, what's that? Where is that? And can I get there? Would that fit into this award? And it was amazing. It was really interesting and not all interesting in a positive sense, in the sense that if you go read about the history of Saipan, there's plenty of stuff that will also make you feel like, wow, that happened in the United States. Like it's part of the United States. There are positives and negatives there, but it was enlightening because I learned about things that I wouldn't have otherwise. And I said, wow, how much other stuff am I missing that I don't know about? And so miles and points created opportunities for that because, hey, I was never going to probably discover Saipan. And if I did and saw it on a map somewhere, I probably wasn't going to look up how much does it cost to fly from New York to Saipan and plan a trip getting there. Whereas when I can use miles and points, that obviously became possible. And so that's, you know, it's all part of the fun.
That sounds like New Caledonia for me. So New Caledonia was this place, this mystical place. And the only reason I even knew about it was because back in the day, there was a kind of a sweet spot for Tokyo to Noumea on Air Callan, you know, where you could use, you know, a SkyTeam mileage currency. I forget if it was Flying Blue or something else, but there was some type of sweet spot between Tokyo and Noumea. And I've always wanted to go. I did finally make it there last year, by the way.
Nice.
But it was always kind of this funny place that only got on my map because of miles and points, which I thought was kind of funny that you've got Saipan, I've got Noumea, New Caledonia, which has been in the news lately, actually, for all the wrong reasons. They've got some political unrest there. So I'm glad I went there when I did. So
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's funny because those are also places that have been on my list. Again, exactly like you said, places that I just wouldn't have even known existed, except for the fact that I saw them on award charts. And I said, oh, what does that look like? And I'll Google and look at pictures and say, oh, wow, that looks pretty cool. You know, that looks like a place
some
I would love to
see. Some people have atlases and learn geography. We have award charts to teach us the geography of the world.
Or mistake fares.
Or mistake. Oh, yeah.
My experience was the Seychelles. I booked a business class flight from the Seychelles to Dublin. And I told my wife, because it was amazing, it was like $400, something like that, on Etihad via Abu Dhabi. And I told my wife, and she's like, oh, that sounds cool. Where's the Seychelles? you learn from these things. And
you do.
You know, maybe it's not as remote as Noumea or Saipan, but
it's pretty remote. Yeah, it's pretty remote. But you know, it's fun and we laugh about it. But I look at it, and now that I have kids, it's so exciting to me because we have a huge map on the wall and we'll show them this is where we're going and this is where we've been. And they point out some of them and remember some of them. Of course, they don't remember everything. They're young. But the fact that they remember some of it and that they put two and two together and they're learning geography, not just by looking at it in a book and memorizing it for a test, but by going to places and seeing things, I think that's incredibly exciting because that's certainly not a world that I grew up living in, and nor one that I thought I would be able to provide for my family someday.
That's awesome. And that's really similar to what we do in my daughter's room. We've got the one of those like big cork sort of maps that like, you know, you have to glue each piece to the wall. So for like a week or two before any trip, as part of the bed routine, I'll hold her in my arms and I'll point. So we'll start here in DC and then we'll fly to London and then down to Nice. And so by the time we're ready to travel, she sort of starts running through it herself. I mean, she's only 2.5, so it's progress, but she totally associates the different parts of the map with areas that are familiar to her. Mm-hmm. If only the map, maybe not associating with the countries as we visit, but it really is a really cool experience.
Well, you'd be amazed at how soon they'll start remembering things. My 3-year-old, it'll be 4 in September, so more than 3.5, I guess, now. But just a couple weeks ago, I was reading him a story about dinosaurs, and there was a piece in it that said something like, it was talking about how the dinosaur, the mommy, got food for the babies. And so it said, where do your mommy and daddy get food for you? And so I asked him, and he said, the lounge. But then later in the same... In the same book, there was a part that mentioned something about flooding. And I was like, oh, you know, flooding. Do you know what flooding means? Just like, I'm not expecting him to say yes. I just was trying to teach him a word. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah. He said, we watched a video in the dinosaur museum and there was flooding. And I was like, the dinosaur museum. And I started like running through my mind those, you know, images. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. That was a museum we went to in Belgium in a city called Brussels, because last summer when he was 2, we went to the Natural History Museum in Brussels because someone at a hotel, the manager of the Marriott we were staying at in Ghent, said, you have to go to this museum. The kids are going to love it if they like dinosaurs, because there's tons of dinosaur stuff. And so we went, and I said, that's right. We went. It was in Belgium in a city called Brussels. He said, yeah. And we went to the Smurf Museum. And I was like, taken aback, because sure enough, there is a little museum there because the Smurfs come from Belgium, of course. That's where the cartoon originated. And so, and we refer to it as the Smurf Museum. It's not actually, if you Google the Smurf Museum in Brussels, you'll find it. It's not exactly called that. I can't remember what, but that's what we had referred to it as. And sure enough, you know, he was 2 last year. He's 3 now. And he put those two memories together in the right city. So it amazes me sometimes what they remember. And is that stuff important? Does he need to know that? Not necessarily, but I hope that it's building, you know, in the long run towards a better understanding of the world.
I love it. And I'm going to hold myself back from wanting to go down on the parenting trend because, I mean, I know that I could probably pick your brain for hours on it. I will say, before we move on to the challenges, which I want to get to, your help on the British Airways and Gibbs posts on the Virgin Atlantic really were instrumental for us to do 2 different trips. So far, neither of the trips have worked out the way that we originally booked them. But it was really cool to be able to get the free business class seat on the way back and just kind of navigating through them, understanding this kind of really niche aspect of those 2 airlines.
Nice. That's awesome. It was a great, great tip that I had picked up from God Save the Points, of course, and worked out really well for us too, because, you know, we were really amazed that it worked. I think that, you know, wow, this is awesome. We're able to get an extra seat and save quite a bit of money or miles or both, as it turned out.
I had a question because, you know, I think one of the things that kind of seems to be a theme here is just using some of your smarts and some sweat equity into kind of creating a travel hack or some kind of strategy to really maximize, you know, a redemption. I'm just curious, what is the most obfuscated, complicated, difficult travel hack you've ever done? I was kind of curious if you have a story there.
Yeah. That's a good one. I mean, there are quite a few things that have been somewhat challenging. The one that I'm currently most excited about, I guess, is the first one that comes to mind, I guess. And that is Air Canada Aeroplan. And I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, Air Canada Aeroplan has been something that has really inspired me to be interested in trying to push the boundaries, because their award chart was made for people like us that get excited about figuring out, okay, how far can I go? What can I do? And so during our 3 Cards, 3 Continents challenge, so the Frequent Miler team every year has been doing a challenge for years now, since going back to 2019. We've been doing an annual team challenge of some sort where we try to figure out what can we do to push the boundaries of miles and points, and what parameters can we create in order to make things more challenging. So a few years back, we had our Three Cards, Three Continents challenge. And if you're a podcast type of a person, we talked about this after the fact on our episode 170 on Frequent Miler on the Air, where we talked about how far can you go with three credit card bonuses. And so one of my redemptions in my Three Card, Three Continents trip, which is where we took three welcome bonuses from credit cards to see who could plan the most incredible trip to three continents, I took Aeroplan miles and I created a really complicated itinerary and I didn't know if it would work. And I ran into some roadblocks along the way with Air Canada agents. And what I eventually was able to book was Washington, D.C. to Cairo on Egypt Air with, like, I don't know, 16 or 18 hour layover in Cairo so that I had enough time to go see the pyramids, to go do some sightseeing with a guide, see a few different things, get back to the airport in time to fly to Istanbul and spend the night. And then in the morning, take a river cruise in Istanbul so I could see both the European side and the Asian side and have gotten to three total continents, that being Africa. And then, of course, Europe and Asia in the first 2 days. And so I did that and then flew on from Istanbul to Oman, also on Turkish Airlines on that one. And then in Oman, I was able to have, again, another 18 or 20 hour layover. So I spent a night and then went on a snorkeling trip, which is not something that I ordinarily associate with the Middle East. It's just not something that I would have thought you do there. Little did I know, there's incredible turtle sightings off the coast of Oman. There's something called the Dayanamat Islands. And so they have just an incredible turtle nesting ground. So if you want to see sea turtles, the water is clear and gorgeous. And there are just so many. They're all over the place. So I booked that snorkeling tour mostly because I thought it was something sounded unique that I wouldn't have associated with going to Oman. And little did I know that for a large chunk of the year, there are whale sharks reliably in those waters. And so on the way out, the boat captain said to me, "We saw a bunch of whale sharks yesterday. And so we're on our way out. If we hear from any other boats that they've seen any, if there's been any sightings, we're going to go find those first and then go onto the turtles." And I was like, "We're going to find the whale sharks first. Okay, let's go." And sure enough, you know, there's been a sighting. Let's go. And before you know it, we're getting in the water. And he's saying, "You know, don't feel like you need to swim towards them or anything. Just get in the water. And trust me, they're going to come up to you and go by you." And my goodness, I did not expect that at some point someone was going to say "behind you," and I would turn and my knee would clip a whale shark as it like swam right by me that close. So they were all over the place. There were at least six of them, but they were constantly circling us in the water. It was absolutely amazing. And I wasn't done yet. I went back to the airport then, continued on and flew to Singapore, spent a night there, visited a Michelin Bib Gourmand food stall there in Singapore. Went to Bangkok. Actually, maybe I flew to Bangkok first and then Singapore, but no matter really, one way or the other. And so in Bangkok, I went to a flower market. In Singapore, I had the crispy curry puff, the J2 crispy curry puff, which I'm going back for later this year. Excited about that. But anyway, and then I continued on from there to Cebu in the Philippines and went and did a whole bunch of cool stuff there, some canyoneering and zip lining. And so all of what I just talked about was a single one-way award that took place over 5 days. And it was a one-way award without even a stopover using Air Canada Aeroplan. It was 115,000 miles one way. Actually, it was a little bit less because they increased the award chart. Nowadays, it would be 115K one way on five different carriers over 6 days. I think it was 6 days. I said 5 days a second. I think it was actually 6 days. And so six segments and just an incredible trip, a one-way award ticket. It was pretty amazing that I was able to do all of that stuff and still get some sleep along the way. So I was pretty proud of that. And this summer, I've got a trip coming up where I'm hopefully going to do something similarly cool, maybe even a little bit cooler. So I'm excited about the fact that I have now completed sort of a two pretty complicated Aeroplan bookings. And the second time around, I had one that was booked that was pretty complicated. And then I decided we wanted to completely change the trip. So I called thinking there's no way I'm going to be able to make the changes I want. But sure enough, I was able to walk the Aeroplan agent through it. They were able to do it, make the changes I needed. So I was pretty proud of that booking also, which was another similarly complex sort of a thing.
Well, you're far better than I am. I tried to change just one that was it was on Etihad. And I think Etihad makes a whole lot more complications, or at least did last year. And I was trying to change it from, I think, Bangkok to Kuala Lumpur. And they couldn't even do that. I wasn't even trying to do layovers or stopovers, or I was just trying to get to Asia one way or another. Are you willing to share that complicated itinerary?
Sure. Because
I'm just curious. I got to have something to strive for.
Great. Okay, good. So this summer, we have plans to go to Europe first because we're doing a free MSC cruise from a bunch of the casino status matching that I've written about. And so that's kind of where it started. Also, I found that tickets to see Taylor Swift were far more reasonable in Warsaw, Poland than in other places. So I got my wife tickets to see Taylor Swift in Warsaw a couple of days before the cruise. And so we're going to a couple of places in Europe and taking a cruise. But then we have some time. And actually, so the danger here is getting into the family travel thing again. But long term, what my wife and I hope to do is that we only learned in the last year or so. Okay, let me back up. We always thought, and we had these dreams and fantasies that someday we might homeschool our kids so that we can travel. We had read about two teachers that took their kids out of school and took a family trip from the northern tip of Alaska to the southern tip of Argentina and taught their kids math through currency conversion and history by seeing stuff. And we said, oh man, that would be awesome. Do something like that someday. And so that had always been in the back of our minds, but we weren't so naive as to think that that's easy or easily doable. And so we never really thought that was realistic, I don't think, even though we kind of had ambitions to do it. And then we found that it doesn't necessarily have to be a year-long commitment. We know people who have disenrolled their kids for just a quarter at a time for 8 or 10 weeks at a time and then re-enrolled them later in school. And we thought, oh, well, that's interesting because we could potentially take the time to take enough time off to do that and then bring the kids back to school and they can still have their friends and be involved in their activities and whatnot, but we could teach them through travel. At the same time, like I said, we're not naive. And I'm like, oh, can we do that though? And can I get my work done? And can we handle all of the regular rigors of travel along the way too? So as a dry run this summer, we're traveling for about 6 or 7 weeks altogether, I think, in order to test at a time when there's no stakes because they're not actually in school anyway, but we're going to pretend like they are and try and get schoolwork done the whole time and see, can we do this? And so we had ambitions to try to do that on kind of a grand scale to test ourselves and say, can we do it? So we had created this trip. We were going to be in Europe already, and we made an Aeroplan booking. I've wanted to get to Mauritius since I wrote about Aeroplan stuff a couple of years ago, because Mauritius just looks cool to me. And it's one of those places, like we were talking about before, like New Caledonia or Saipan, that it's like, I never in a million years would have ever thought that I would or could go there. But I can, because Air Canada, of course, partners with Air Mauritius. So why not? So we booked this flight. It was actually originally Venice to Paris, Venice to Zurich to Paris to Mauritius. And I said, well, that's not enough. We need to continue on from there somewhere, right? So let's make that a stopover and we can continue on to South Africa and then from there to Victoria Falls. So after a stopover in Mauritius, we're going to fly to Johannesburg, have about a 24-hour layover, and then fly on to Victoria Falls. And so the plan was we'd go to Victoria Falls and then drive to Botswana and do some safari type stuff there, Chobe National Park. But my 3-year-old has become very prone to motion sickness and gets car sick very, very easily. And that's been getting worse over the last few months. And so we said, this is not going to work. And we were planning on doing way too much driving in Africa. And I can't imagine on roads that perhaps aren't going to be as well-developed or paved or whatever, that this is going to go well. So we said, we're just not going to be able to do that. So let's go to Asia instead. And, you know, can we go to Tokyo maybe and go do some stuff in Asia and go do Tokyo Disney and whatnot? But I had this complicated booking with Air Canada that was not a refundable award, by the way. It was, well, it is in the sense that Air Canada has a change fee. It was not one of the free flex ones anyway. And so I called and I had 4 seats on Air Mauritius to Mauritius, and I didn't want to lose that. I wanted to keep that stuff, but I wanted to add more stuff on to the end. And so I said, well, is there any way for me to keep that and add on to it and change this from being an all Atlantic award to being an Atlantic to Pacific award with a stopover in Mauritius still? And not give up those 4 seats on the first flight. And the agent said, well, yeah, I think actually maybe we can do that. And I was like, oh, yeah. And so sure enough, she was able to not drop the 4 seats on that Paris to Mauritius flight. I actually dropped the initial couple of legs off. So we did the Paris to Mauritius, and then we're continuing on after a stopover in Mauritius to Kuala Lumpur, Singapore for about a day so that I can get my crispy curry puff. And literally, that's why I picked Singapore. So I get that crispy curry puff, it was that good. Then from Singapore on to Osaka, and we'll spend a couple days there and see Tokyo, or I'd rather see the Universal there because there's a Nintendo World. My kids are getting into Nintendo. And then we'll go from there to Tokyo and try to do Tokyo Disney and Team Labs. I can't wait to take my kids to Team Labs there in Tokyo. So anyway, I was able to change that without, again, losing the Air Mauritius segment, which I assumed they would have to cancel the whole thing, but they didn't. They were able to hold that and just change the rest of the segments and charge me the new Atlantic to Pacific zone price. So they had to charge me more miles. They had to, of course, refund some taxes and charge some different taxes. And sure enough, the nice phone agent proactively offered to waive the change fees. So I didn't even have to pay the fee to change, which was a nice, pleasant surprise because I thought that was going to cost me $500 or $600. So I was pretty happy not to pay that much.
That's okay. Great.
I'm putting Mauritius on my list now. It's doable. I forgot that they were an Aeroplan partner. So that's
they
are, incredible.
And they frequently do have like up to 6 seats on the Paris to Mauritius flight. Like that flight typically has up to 6 seats available. So it's one that's actually pretty doable if you, you know, with a family.
It is on the list now. And it's interesting because you mentioned the Aeroplan thing. That really inspired me. I've probably burned, I don't know, 1, maybe 1.5 million Aeroplan miles since late 2021. But another thing that I thought was really interesting is your 40K far away challenge. Was that 2019?
2019, yep.
That was where I first learned about Turkish. And Tom and I did a Turkish redemption, not a domestic redemption, which was, I think, how you shared it, which was pretty incredible, I thought. But just opening us up to looking at that program, I mean, it's so easy to kind of look at the main European ones, the North American programs, and expanding to ANA and Cathay. Well, I don't even know how many people look at Cathay Asia miles nowadays. Maybe more than in 2019, but Turkish was a blind spot for me. And I thought that that challenge kind of highlighted the flexibility of that program as well.
The other thing that I hear in that that I think is really good advice is the miles and points people were maximizing. Any originating or ending route that has North America in it tends to be so much more difficult than some of these like Europe to Asia, Europe to Africa, something that starts in another region where people aren't this miles and points crazy. And it seems like you get a lot more opportunity when your start or your finish isn't New York or LA or DC. It's just, you know, you're starting in Paris or you're starting in Copenhagen or something like that.
It's so true. It's absolutely true. I often find it's far easier to find award availability, especially when people talk about how difficult it can be for a family to find 3 or 4 seats, particularly if you want to fly in premium cabins. And it is, like you said, flying to or from the United States. But once you're outside of the United States, it's often quite easy, like you said, because there are far fewer people, A, that are as crazy about miles and points, but also B, they just don't have as many opportunities to earn so many miles and points as we do in the United States. They don't have as many credit cards and various multipliers in other countries. So we're very fortunate in that regard here to have all of these crazy miles and points opportunities. So there's fewer people that we're competing with is the moral of the story, I think, for a lot of those award seats. So that makes it far easier to find those connecting the dots sort of awards in different regions. And that's something that I think has been fun about our challenges is that, you know, it has enabled us to highlight that a little bit, I think, because we've made more complicated bookings to show that look, you do this and you can do that and you can do the other thing. If you're not just trying to plan, okay, I'm going to go from New York to Paris, which is there's nothing necessarily there's anything wrong with going New York to Paris. I love Paris. I love New York. And a simple round trip for a week is the type of vacation that I think most humans can and do plan. And I get that. But if you have any flexibility or the ability to think outside of the box and the time, and you know, again, flexibility is important here. You need to have at least some time flexibility to be able to try to connect dots with different regions. Then all of a sudden things open up quite a bit more. I think you're right. But you know, back to the Turkish thing that you mentioned. So our 40K to far away challenge, we each started with 40,000 points and $400. And the goal is to see who can get the farthest away possible. And we each took a different currency. This idea just came up as we were meeting. We do a once a year face-to-face where the whole team gets together. And we were walking for ice cream when this idea got floated, actually. And we were just kind of discussing stuff, ideas, general ideas. And this came out of nowhere. And right away, so we said, we'll each take a different major currency. And I was like, I want Citi thank you points. And they were like, why do you want Citi thank you points? And I said, because it seems like the obvious loser. And I want to be the one to show everybody that, no, I can take the worst currency and still beat you guys. And of course, I didn't beat them for the spoiler alert, because I went over budget, not on the points side. It was on the cash side. I spent about $650, I think, in the end. And so that kind of disqualified me. But anyway, what it forced me to do is, okay, well, I better look at these Citi transfer partners. I wanted to look at every single one of them and say, okay, well, which ones are people not writing much about? And what is there that people haven't found or haven't seen or didn't know about yet? And I think my guess is that Turkish changed something probably at the perfect moment for me to take advantage of it. And just I happened to get lucky and find it before somebody else did, before anybody else blogged about it anyway. So yeah, I just looking at the award charts, like we said, there's so many times that I've discovered interesting things just looking at award charts. So I was just looking at their award chart and noticed that, oh, look at that. Honolulu is in North America. That's interesting. And when I started pricing awards, I found Honolulu to Guam priced like it was North America to whatever their definition of Oceania is or whatever they call it. And I was like, well, look at that. It goes to the other, I think they call it. It prices like that. Does that mean that Honolulu is in North America? Which, of course, you know, by some measure it is, but not usually on award charts. And so then I, of course, noticed the domestic thing. By that point, I had already found that a transcontinental flight would work for the pricing at the time. It was 7,500 miles one way in economy for a domestic Star Alliance award. And that was, again, written into their award chart at the time. So that was pretty exciting. I thought New York to Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles for 7,500 miles. I was like, wow, this is going to be a huge find. But then I discovered that Honolulu was pricing in such a way that I thought, wow, this might actually price at 7,500 miles. And we had actually done an FM to go, an in-person face-to-face event just a couple of days before. And I was talking and I said, you know, I'm waiting to get an email back, but I think in a few days I'm going to find out that it only costs 7,500 miles one way to fly to Hawaii. And I don't think anybody in the room probably believed me when I said that. And then wouldn't you know it, a few days later, I got that email back from a ticket office finally. And I booked Washington, D.C. to Honolulu with a stop somewhere. I can't even Los Angeles, Chicago. I can't remember where it was that I had my layover on the way, but for 7,500 miles. Now, of course, it'd be 10,000 miles. That price has increased to a whopping 10,000 miles one way in economy class. Business class is incredible too, if you could actually find it. But the trouble these days, of course, is that United is not releasing very much award space to partners, and that's a huge bummer. But hopefully that will be something that ebbs and flows over time. But that was, I mean, I can't tell you the excitement late one night, you know, when I discovered that and I thought it was true, and then I booked it, and then I was like, oh, I bet I can't tell anybody because this challenge is going to be a surprise. But then I was like, oh, but this is too good to keep it a secret. And so, you know, finally I was like, oh, listen, Greg, I got to tell you something. I don't really want to ruin anything for the challenge, but this is too big to probably keep under wraps. So anyway, yeah, then we wrote about it, of course, and I think some people thought it would die right away, and it didn't. And so that was awesome. But it was a lot of fun, and I only found it because I said, okay, well, I've got to find a way to get as far as I can on as few miles as I can. And so I started looking at award charts to see which pieces of the puzzle can I put together. And that Turkish one was a cool find. It was exciting.
I love it. So let's pivot to your current challenge. So we're recording this about a week before you're heading out on that challenge. We're going to try to get this released, I think, next week, the week you do head out on the challenge. Tell us about that challenge and if you want to share any ways that you're sort of strategizing for it, because I think there's a lot of mystery to kind of that challenge, unlike past challenges where you kind of knew the parameters and you had time to plan. This mm-hmm. sounds like it's more of a, you've got to react pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's very different in that regard. And funny enough, my wife, you know, just yesterday was saying, I can't believe you're doing this year's challenge in like a week. And I said, yeah, me either, because this time around, there's been far less buildup in the planning stage, not to say no preparation. And I think that's the distinction you were making there, that there's a, you know, there have been some preparations I've made, but not the same kind of planning. Because on past challenges, like you said, we kind of set parameters and said, okay, here are the parameters that you need to fall in between. You know, the first year it was the 40,000 points and the $400. And then we had the 3 credit card bonuses to get as far away as you can. And then we had one last year that was party of 5. So the challenge was planning international premium cabin travel for 5 people. And so this year's challenge is a lot different in that it doesn't have that type of parameter. But instead, what we're doing is a last minute challenge, last minute travel challenge. We're calling it flying by the seat of our points. And so what's going to happen is that we're all going to find out. So I say all 3 of us are competing this time around. Greg, the frequent miler, me, and Tim, our other full-time employee. The 3 of us are going to be traveling. Carrie and Steven, our other 2 team members, are the judges, and they're sort of working behind the scenes on this one. So what's going to happen is all of 5 of us will get on a live stream. And Carrie and Steven are going to tell the 3 of us, Greg, Tim, and I, where we need to be in the United States 48 hours later. So we're going to do the live stream on June 3rd. I don't know whether that'll be future or past by the time this publishes. But on June 3rd, we'll find out where we need to be 48 hours later on June 5th. And that'll be somewhere domestic, somewhere in the United States. So that will be somewhat less complicated, hopefully. So the 3 of us will all have to converge somewhere domestically. And then when we arrive there on June 5th, we're going to have another live stream where Carrie and Steven will tell us each where we have to get internationally, and we have to be there in 48 hours on June 7th. So we're going to find out where we need to be in 2 days, and we're going to have to immediately, after that live stream ends, get booking to figure out, okay, how am I going to get there in the next 48 hours for as few points as possible and as much luxury as possible and have a trip that looks cooler than everybody else's. So we're going to try to come up with a great way to do that. So we're all going to be in different international places. They're going to give us some local travel challenges to complete that hopefully will force us to get out and see and do some things that you might be interested in seeing and doing if you go to wherever it is that we're going. And then from there, when we get to that individual international destination where the three of us will be in three different places somewhere in the world, no idea where, then we're going to find out where the three of us need to meet back up 48 hours later. And so the three of us on June 9th will meet up somewhere all together in one place, and we will have three travel challenges to complete as a team, as the three of us, where each one of us will have to plan one of those. I have no idea what these things are, but but we'll have to plan something and do those, and then we'll have some judging and determine who did the best in terms of meeting the goal, which is, of course, to find the, you know, the best ways to do it for the fewest points, get the best value, the most incredible redemptions. So we'll see how that works out. So in preparation for that, I've been spending a lot of time using different award booking tools, like Seats.Arrow has been one that I've spent a lot of time looking at lately, because it's super helpful in identifying, okay, well, where can I find a premium cabin flight? I can do the explore feature and look at, for instance, American Airlines and check any of their different partners from North America to Asia. What can I find to get me to Asia? And so it's helpful in determining the patterns of when awards become available, how close to departure do they become available, so that hopefully when this challenge kicks off next week, I'll already have in mind, if they tell me I'm going somewhere in Asia, for instance, oh, well, I can probably get a flight from Chicago or from Los Angeles, depending on where I start. I'll have at least an idea as to the international gateway in the United States that'll make the most sense for getting to that destination. And I think that's something that's a valuable piece for a lot of people who primarily think in terms of planning travel from their home city. They're like, oh, I live in Boston or I live in, you know, Miami or wherever it is you live. And you look up awards starting there. I live in Grand Rapids. And you're like, why can't I find anything from Grand Rapids? It's because, you know, those smaller flights are much harder. And so you want to start with the long haul flights first, right? And so having an understanding of, okay, well, which gateway cities have the best availability is, I think, a cornerstone to winning at this game, really.
I love those three character gateway city codes, you know, like EST for all the Eastern city gateways, ASA, all the larger Asian gateways. I think you just do USA, it's all the, you know, the top international gateways in the US. Those are so powerful, I find, in Seats.Arrow in particular. And, you know, for listeners who haven't searched that out, that's one, I think, one of the more valuable power tools within Seats.Arrow, is that you've got those three-letter codes that make it very easy to say, I don't care where I'm going, I just know I'm going from US to Asia, show me, you know, or I'm going from Europe to Asia or whatever. It's EUR to ASA. You have all these options to just put in two regions and show me everything you got.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that makes it even more interesting is I find out about, like, for example, every so often you see, I think it's Dulles to Geneva. It's either Newark or Dulles to Geneva has more space than anyone else. So you might see two or three seats to Geneva, but if you're not looking specifically for Geneva, that might not come up on some of the other tools. But Seats.Arrow, if you do that approach that you mentioned, TK, you see those different kind of unique ones pop up.
Yeah, and I think that version of travel planning is the one that perhaps seems intuitive to folks like, you know, you guys and me that are planning award travel often, but maybe isn't as intuitive to the average human being who doesn't usually plan travel. You know, I live closest to New York City. So what am I, why would I be looking for a flight from Chicago? Well, because maybe Chicago has better availability, or DC is a great example because we often find better availability out of Dulles to places. And I live in upstate New York. So a flight to Dulles is about an hour or so. It's an easily doable thing that I can get there and plan my international travel out of Dulles instead of planning it out of my small local airport and then fill in the gaps and figure out how to get from point A to point B to make that work. And that'll be part of the challenge, is, you know, figuring out that positioning at the last minute too. But I think that'll add some pressure and some gamification in terms of trying to figure out, again, what the patterns might be, what gateway cities we might want to look from. And then not only that, but of course, you know, what will get me close to where it is I want to go? Because you made a great point with maybe you aren't looking to get to Geneva. Well, no, but getting across the pond in business class should be the priority there, because you want the bed overnight, right? So you want to fall asleep, and it doesn't really matter whether you fly into Geneva or Paris or London or wherever else, if you can take another hour-long flight from there to get to where you want to go, if it means that you're going to get a place to sleep for the night on the plane. And so I think that's important stuff for people that are going to follow along, I hope.
I will definitely be following along. I do a lot of last minute, less than I used to, because it's just so much harder now. So I'm excited for what you guys learn. Do you have any sort of prep or any tricks up your sleeve that you feel comfortable sharing relative to kind of those experiences that you'll have to plan in a particular place?
There are a number of different things, but one thing that actually, so for saving money, for planning in a specific place, so two different things. For planning in a specific place, what a lot of people have told me is stop looking at TripAdvisor. And I don't know whether this is true or not, but people have told me, you know, if you want to look for a good restaurant in your town, do you go to TripAdvisor? No, you know, you probably go to Reddit or you go to Yelp or something like that. And so seeking out those types of sources of information rather than the more mainstream trip planning type sites, I think is one tip for finding really cool stuff. So when it comes to actual activities, I am not the type of person who ever used to book organized tours, but now that I've done a few, I can see the value in it sometimes. And Viator is a site that is really sort of a dual-edged sword to me in terms of I love it and I hate it. I love it because it enables me to find things like that snorkeling trip to see the sea turtles that I didn't even know existed until I found it on there. And then I hate it because, of course, they're not very good at customer service. So if something goes wrong and the operator cancels your booking or whatever, they're not going to help you. And that was something that I learned the hard way during our Passing the Guck challenge a few years ago when my hot air balloon ride got canceled at the last minute. But anyway, what I like about it is there are a lot of ways to stack. The stacker in me likes the stackery involved in Viator because there are often card-linked offers, either Amex offers or City Merchant offers or even Chase offers now and then. And the Capital One shopping portal, if you just play around with the Capital One shopping browser extension a little bit, you get incredible offers for Viator all the time, 20 to 30% back. I'm getting them consistently in my email. And so even though there are some potential downsides, and yes, you can save some money booking directly with a travel provider if that's an option, getting 20 to 30% back plus a card-linked offer usually results in even more savings. So that's something that I'm going to look to try to leverage on this trip. We'll see how it works out.
What a great tip.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I've started using Viator more. I've looked at this Get Your Guide. I don't know that I've booked anything through them yet, but we have had some good success through Viator.
That reminds me of one other thing that I discovered sort of through there. And that's this site that I think I'm going to double check as I say this, but I think it's called Eat With. And this is one that we found during our Party of Five challenge last year. Yeah, Eat With Culinary Experiences. So eatwith.com is one that actually my wife brought up to me and I was like, oh yes, I'm going to try to use that on this challenge. And I hope that nobody else on the team listens to this before I find a way to do it. But that's because what we did last year was we booked this thing. We booked it through Viator, but it was also on Eat With, and that's the site they primarily used. And so what it was in Buenos Aires, we had a meal with a local couple in Argentina. So they were from there, born and raised and everything. They were fairly young, maybe 30 or so, professional in web design and whatnot, and fascinating for conversation. So we had dinner in their apartment. They cooked for us. They cooked an incredible meal. So we got local food prepared by local people and had conversation about local problems and local struggles and whatever else, and also all sorts of recommendations for things to do and places to go that came from regular, ordinary folks that we never probably would have met traveling as tourists. And so that's something that really appeals to me and that I hope to be able to use on this because I think that made for a really memorable experience. We had such an incredible conversation with these young folks about what life is like for young people in Argentina and both positives and negatives with that. And that was something I think really enlightening and eye-opening and fun and enjoyable and cool. And we got to share in all this local stuff that we would have probably missed if we just stayed in a hotel and ate at a famous restaurant or something. So that's something I hope to use more often in my travels in general and specifically on this next trip because we all liked it so much. But I'm betting that neither Greg nor Tim really remembers eatwith.com and I do. So I'm looking forward to trying to use that.
Awesome. I love that tip. That sounds so interesting. I would totally do that.
I think that might be the biggest piece of gold out of an episode full of a treasure trove of gold.
I love all the little nuggets that we've collected on this one. Good. Especially with the spot price of gold being what it is.
No kidding.
Oh, read between the lines there, right? So, Nick, you know, we've taken up about an hour of your time. We really appreciate you coming on. We kind of jumped right into our chat at the beginning. So I wanted to give you a chance to just share with our listeners who you are, where they can find you. Obviously, you're kind of big in the community, but it never hurts to kind of reinforce that.
Thank you. Yeah, I meet new people all the time, and I love to meet and learn from folks. So my name is Nick Reyes. I write at Frequent Miler, and it's frequentmiler.com. You can find me on Instagram, Nick at FM, or on Twitter, X, whatever it is these days. Same, Nick ATFM. So NICKATFM. So you can find me online in various places like that. But again, frequentmiler.com is where we blog. I've been there full time as a senior author since 2017. So that's where you can find us. And of course, you can listen to us each week too, if you prefer podcasts. That's why we're here, I suppose, right? We all like podcasts. So you can find Frequent Miler on the air on all your favorite podcast platforms. We drop a new episode, a weekly episode that runs about an hour, hour and a half every week on Fridays. And then on Tuesdays, we drop a coffee break episode where we have a shorter 20-minute chat about something really specific about the miles and points game that's on our minds. So two episodes a week coming out for Frequent Miler on the air.
And you guys are generally my Saturday morning errands companions. I will say that.
Happy to be there. Definitely. Happy to be there with you. We love doing it. I'm glad people like to listen as much as we like to do it. So that's great.
And that's kind of similar to why Tom and I do this. It's definitely a passion. So Nick, thank you so much for coming on. And we hope to have you back. You're welcome anytime. If you want to come back after the challenge, you are more than welcome.
That'd be great. I'd love to come back and chat again.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.